show success.
Gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, brought to you in proud partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Good afternoon, Will.
Good morning, Vinnie. Well, you don't normally talk to me in the first segment. This is unusual.
Yeah, well, you know, I've decided that I'm being a bit of a dick, so I've decided.
Like today or something. What's the date? I'm just trying to work out the numerological reference here, Vinny.
Yeah, it's February 11. So who knows?
It's 11/02/2011. There you go. That's why.
Wow.
It's a mirrored number. You see?
That's freaked out, man. You're just tripping balls now. Speaking of tripping balls, New Zealand government debt fixation ignores social ills, says church report. This in from GorillaMedia.co.nz. The Salvation Army's annual State of the Nation report published today says the government is becoming too fixated on reducing debts and is failing to tackle long-standing social problems, namely the fact that we have a reserve bank, much like the Federal Reserve Bank, which Fs this country up to no end. Unsurprisingly, the report finds that the recession has hit New Zealanders hard since late 2007. Numbers on the unemployment benefit almost quadrupled from 17,710 in June 2008 to 68,369 in January 2010. And we're still at 68,087 at the end of last month. And also, incidentally, the building industry has collapsed, which means that new houses have fallen behind population growth. In Auckland, for example, where I live, 8,500 to 9,000 houses over the past 5 years, including a shortfall of 3,500 to 4,000 houses in the year to last June. Ironically, the recession has also made housing more affordable if you can get it. Salvation Army analyst Alan Johnston said it took 7.7 years of the average wage to buy a median price house at the end of 2007 and only 6.9 years by the end of last year, which is still quite a lot further than it was back in the 50s, where I believe it was like, what was it, Will? Like 3 years of the average wage could buy your house or something?
Yeah, good rule of thumb was 3 to 1, and now we're well over 9 to 1. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, you know, and I remember a report that came out of the New Zealand Herald. Oh, no, actually, I think this was on 3 News not too long ago, saying that over 50% of Auckland residents will never, ever be able to afford to buy a home. That's just sick. Never being able to have your own castle. I don't like that idea whatsoever. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Coming up, we have Bob Melamede, who is a cannabis medicinal expert, right after the break.
I got some so-called friends. My right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on?
And very few politicians are on our side, I can guarantee ya. Because it's not in a politician's best interest to solve problems, because then he'd be out of the job. So then it is a politician's job to create problems. problems like the drug war, for example, preferably problems that can never be ever conceivably be solved, so as to ensure perpetual employment of political scum. It is on that particular note that I invite our very extremely marvellous and special guest, Bob Melamed. Bob, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you kindly for such a load of you-know-what.
BS. All right, now, I wanted to get you to sort of explain to our audience who you are, because you've told me I know who you are, but our audience certainly does not. Now, you're an affiliate of Rick Simpson, and you're one of those few people in the scientific community that is, in fact, an advocate of cannabis. Could you please tell us more?
Well, I've been an advocate of cannabis since I started using it many, many, many years ago when I was 16 years old. I started college and I started cannabis at the same time, and they kind of reinforced one another and opened up my mind. And I, as a result, became a pathological learner. And as a result of that, I became a professor. I've been involved with research for many, many years, and I was at the University of Vermont, then at the University of Colorado, and actually prior to that, I was at New York Medical College, and prior to that, I was at the part of the City University of New York. So I've had a history of science, and the science naturally led me, quite fortunately, ultimately into cannabis research. So historically, what I was always interested in is trying to understand life. And in those efforts, I discovered a form of physics that was pioneered by the late Nobel laureate Ilya Prigogine, and that gives you a really incredible perspective as to what's going on in the universe and how life occurred and how life evolves, and actually the nature of our social, political, and economic structures as well, all as a natural emergent phenomena from the underlying physics. And as I started to incorporate my knowledge of biology into that physics, that's pretty much when the endocannabinoid system, the science associated with the endocannabinoid system back in the, really in the 90s is when it started to explode, and just has continued to explode more and more every year, every day, literally, as a result of the discovery that we have what's called an endocannabinoid system, that we make marijuana-like compounds. And the most incredible, amazing story behind that is that these endocannabinoids literally regulate everything in our body. So our immune system, digestive system, cardiovascular system, skin, muscles, bone, everything in your body is regulated by the pot that your body makes. Pretty far
out. Our bodies make cannabinoids?
Yes, they do. They're called endocannabinoids, cannabis from within, as opposed to phytocannabinoids, plant-derived ones.
Well, so what's the implication of that? Because, I don't know, if the drug war goes taken through to its logical conclusion, would it be illegal to be alive then?
Well, you know, that's the stupidity. These people just don't get it. In large part, let's assume that the bulk of them don't get it because they just don't have the knowledge. But there are a significant number of them out there who are what I call broken, in that, as I just said, the cannabinoid system regulates everything in your body. And part of the everything that they regulate is literally your open-mindedness. So there are some people who are going to be intrinsically cannabinoid deficient with respect to its capacity to help foster open-mindedness.
And so conversely, if I was to encounter somebody who is extremely closed-minded, they don't believe 9/11 is an inside job, they don't believe in that there's such a thing as elites, they don't believe that fluoride is bad for you, I could then prescribe cannabis to them as a cure for them being retarded.
You know, it only can help those for whom the deficiency is a lack of the production of those endocannabinoids, but it's part of a pathway. The nature of this physics is you don't look at the isolated events, you look at the flow of everything that's communicating and talking and flowing to one another. So if your receptor system, for example, is broken, then having the cannabinoids will not work properly. So it all depends where the deficiency is. But the consequences of the inescapable reality that there are going to be people who have higher levels and lower levels with all sorts of activities. But let's just for a minute focus on this open-minded story. I believe there's profound consequences to that. It goes to what I call blips and flips, backward-looking people versus forward-looking people. If you are deficient in open-mindedness, then you tend to spend more of your consciousness looking into the past because the future holds unknowns and you don't adapt well to change. So you'd rather things remain the way they are. And I believe there's really important consequences to that because these backward-looking people, the blips, because they are looking at what's already occurred, they tend to have a consensus of opinion, and that gives them power. And they, I believe, congregate and concentrate in government. And that's why we have this insane policies, as certainly most manifest by the war on cannabis. One of the questions that I always ask people in an effort to, you know, elicit a little bit of excitement and to wake up their brains is who in their right mind would outlaw an anti-aging drug that kills cancers and is the activity of which is found in mother's milk? So, you know, of course, that blows people away. Oh, you mean it's an anti-aging drug? It kills cancer? It's in mother's milk? But then we have to carry that even further. Well, does that mean that we should go around and arrest breastfeeding mothers because they're basically giving their kids a little bit of a buzz to relax them from the trauma of childbirth? And from the
well, they'd want to do that, don't they? I mean, that's why they develop all these formulas and try and break up families and tell them you can't even raise your own children education-wise.
Well, it's all part of that same story. You see, the backward-looking people like everything to be very linear and very organized. They retain the biochemical characteristics of the insects who don't have cannabinoid receptors. So they like things to be hardwired. It's kind of like a beehive, you know. They have a social structure, but everything has its place, and there's no freedom and choice and movement and evolution, really. Whereas,
for a minute here, though, if we look on the other side, if you take people to the far open-minded extreme, I can see problems there too. I can see people who are too open-minded are kind of like chaotic to the point of nihilism, also.
You know? Well, and you're right, because one of the fundamental characteristics of this physics that I describe is that the way everything works is that there's always a balance of opposing forces. So you have to have the right setting between how open-minded versus how closed-minded you are. I mean, if you look at the extreme of open-mindedness, let's take somebody who's tripping on LSD. Obviously, their minds are quite open at that point, but, you know, they can't do anything. You know, they can maybe make music if, you know, like Jimi Hendrix and stuff. But you can't sit down and run a company in general while you're tripping. So we have to have some boundaries for open-mindedness. And on the other hand, if you're hardwired, then you're not even really alive in the extreme because everything is pre-programmed. So somewhere in between there, we're healthy. And there are consequences not only to being closed-minded, but additional there's really benefits in many respects to being open-minded. One of the characteristics of cannabis users is that they're optimistic. Well, think about what optimism means. It means that you don't know what the future holds, but you feel that you will be able to adapt to it.
Optimism has also been described as a lack of realism. But I would say
that that's probably the description that would be given to you by the blips.
Yeah, quite possibly. But I agree with you. I mean, finding that combination in people of open-mindedness, but at the same time, the ability for them to have a directional train of thought is a rare combination.
Well, I don't think it's so rare.
I think all of us are flawed, and I don't think any one person can really excel at both ends sometimes.
Well, and I think that tends to be true because they're mutually exclusive, which is why you know, you have both types existing in the population. And the very important thing to remember is because of the natural quality of having a balance of opposing forces, you do need both sides to create a successful society. The problem is, where is the thermostat set? And in my opinion, there was certainly a need for kind of a dominant organizing nature as man evolved. You know, you had the king, even though he was an abusive pig often, at least he was creating some kind of social structure and organization. But as we've progressed through time and through developing more complicated social structures, et cetera, we're now at the point in human evolution where that linear kind of organized nature is no longer suitable, as evidenced by the fact that we have blips running the world who, by virtue of their cannabinoid deficiency, not only are not open-minded, but they tend to be more aggressive and all of the other characteristics of people.
Well, that's probably why they run the world. But, you know, I would argue that the way society has, you know, quote, evolved towards having these narrow-minded, sort of historically-minded people running things isn't probably a result of natural evolution so much as their ability to kill and maim their political opponents and then set up a state of fear and socially engineer people, so sort of interference in the process.
But that is, in fact, a product of our evolution. That's where man's intelligence and collective dialogue has taken us now. And that's why we're at such an amazingly critical point right now. Because, for example, you know, we're polluting the world, regardless of what side of the fence you'd look at in terms of thermal pollution and the, you know, the effect of CO2 on atmospheric change and global heating. Put that aside. What is absolutely undeniably true is that we've polluted the shit out of the world. You can't go anywhere. And
you also can't use certain words because we're under FCC regulations. But continue.
Those blips have set those regulations.
So I'll say tis, which is that other word backwards. So now I've retracted it.
We have definitely, there's a balance, yeah. I mean, but we've definitely polluted the world. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean,
yeah, but now, so.
But the climate change has confused that with their form of pollution. That's what I don't like about that argument, but anyway.
Well, the whole issue here really is that if you have people in government who cannot take in data and change their mind because they believe that everything's perfect and God is going to take care of us and blah, 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 you know, then they're not able to create policies that are consistent with human survival.
They're creating policies. They're creating plenty of policies around the world to, quote, save man from anthropogenic warming. It's totally ridiculous. I think they're creating too much policy, if anything.
No, but they're creating all the wrong policies is my point. Because if you cannot look and see the consequences of man's impact on his environment, and if you're too stupid to realize that the environment will have impacts on us, then you keep things in your illusionary world of believing that everything is perfect. Whereas we have to have people in government who are able to analyze what's coming in a realistic fashion, not based on their religious principles and their, you know, moral anality, but rather by looking to the best of their ability at scientific data that's gathered in the best ability, and then try to make policies that make sense so that we can survive. You got to remember, most species that have ever existed on the planet are dead.
We were having this conversation yesterday, and it came up that you know, through the sort of travels of the East India Company and, you know, the front of the British Empire during Francis Bacon's time, that this sort of model of empiricism was set up as the kind of yardstick of the ruling class. And so then people say, well, they're living in the old world, they're running the world via some sort of Judeo-Christian ethic, when really they're more into empirical thought. Sometimes that happens to be devoid of social or moral responsibility. What do you think about that?
Well, I think, again, that's part of the evolution and who is running the world, because, you know, it's been the aggressive, self-serving people, the greedy, more greedy people that have been able to create policy and economic structures and everything else, which served a purpose. And even though it was self-serving in many respects, you know, we have evolved to the point that we're at now. We have lots of knowledge about things, but yet we remain in the dark about so much. And we need to totally flip who's been running the world. We need to have a higher level of cannabinoid endowedness. We have to have people who are more willing to be cooperative and open-minded and less greedy and less aggressive. You know, when you see people who are stoned together, if you ever go to like any of these cannabis conferences put on by any organization, but, you know, one of my favorite ones certainly is Patients Out of Time, which is a mixture of activists and scientists and doctors. And you feel the vibes of people who are cannabinoid endowed, where you have that common spirit of, you know, it's like the old hippie days of love, peace and love. I mean, it's very simple. Peace and love goes a long way if that's the paradigm by which you act on, you know, by which you live.
One thing that's really disturbing me about this this kind of cannabis issue is the fact that there's so many people that actually use cannabis and don't speak out about it. And that's one of the real tyrannies of the law, is that not only is it illegal to use something that's actually good for you, but also at the same time, if you do speak out, you'll lose your job. Therefore, not only does the law stop you from enjoying something, it also curtails your free speech to no end.
And it's more than just free speech. It's freedom of religion, because if you believe, as I do, for example, that cannabis is a necessary nutrient that helps foster our advancement as individuals and collectively as a society, and that it's the incorporation of, you know, a science-based reality into humanity. And my science is different than many others. That's a separate story here because of the foundation in this far from equilibrium thermodynamics that most people don't even know about. But, you know, we just have to change what's going on as we evolve to a new level. And one of the characteristics, really, of this physics is that prior to having a gross change where there's a disconnect between the past and the newness that occurs, you don't see little incremental changes. You see big change.
And let's hope that we can actually bring about certain big changes in our world today. Our very special guest is Bob Malamede, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll be right back after the break on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcasting live from the future on the American Freedom Radio Network. Back in a moment. Broadcasting live from the future, we're bringing you information that you won't hear on any other network. It's American Freedom Radio, and we are the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Now, interesting updates. If you are a listener to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, you may have remembered that we had a Facebook group chat going at some point, and then for some reason it just kind of dropped off. Turns out Facebook has a rule that if you have more than 250 people in your Facebook group, you can no longer have group chat. So we've created a new one, the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will Ryan chat group. If you wish to participate in the chat, join it. If you're just willing to join the Facebook group of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, just join the regular one. Our very special guest is Bob Malamede, and he is a cannabis expert and activist and professor indeed. And, you know, to some people out there who've never tried cannabis before, you'd probably be wondering why a cannabis user managed to get professor status. Bob, welcome back.
My pleasure. I always like to point out that one of the most important biological advances, technological advances, was the discovery of something called PCR, polymerase chain reaction, for which a guy named Kerry Mullis got the Nobel Prize. And Kerry Mullis came up with that idea while he was stoned.
Well, like I say, always shocked, never surprised. Well, and this just begs the question as well. I mean, if you're saying that cannabis molecules, cannabinoids, indeed get produced by the body and are in fact, basically, they're linked to open-mindedness, they're linked to creativity. So would it be, but it's not the be-all and end-all of it, though, is it? I mean, there are people who have never used cannabis before in their lives, but... Then again, the endocannabinoids, though, kind of complicates this factor, doesn't it? Because there are creative people out there who don't use the herb, but they can still be creative, can't they?
Exactly. Well, see, the whole thing you got to remember is that everybody in the world, from the time they are conceived until the time they die, their existence is very much regulated by their cannabinoid activity. It has to do with the production of sperm, the maturation of sperm, the egg, the implantation, the traveling of the egg through the oviduct. Your cannabinoid system regulates everything. And we all suffer from a common biochemical imbalance because we're all getting older and there's certain biochemistry associated with that. And in general, your cannabinoid system is protecting you from what I call the friction of life, which has a lot to do with inflammation and the generation of free radicals. And it's really such an amazing story. If we have time, I'd like to elaborate on it here. You know, from an evolutionary point of view, when what's called eukaryotic cells, cells that have a nucleus and chromosomes as opposed to, say, bacteria, when those cells first evolved, after the only cells that were around for a billion years were bacteria-like cells, then you had the evolution of these more modern cells called eukaryotes. And they evolved by going from single-celled organisms to multi-celled organisms, simple ones that really didn't have any sophistication, things like sponges. And eventually a point was reached where there was like an indent in the ball of cells, and that formed an anus and a mouth. And evolutionary change continued until that indent turned into a tube. So we all have a tube that runs through us from our mouth to our anus. Well, it turns out that all animals are divided into two categories. Those where embryologically the anus forms first. That happens to be all vertebrates and man. Whereas the head forms first in what's known as the proteostomes, and those are the insects and the crustacean. Now look at what happened evolutionarily here. It's really quite amazing. You know, the cockroach, for example, today is very much like the cockroach of the past. They haven't made iPods or any of these cool things that are now part of our world. If you in turn look at the evolution of vertebrates, and you see that we had fish and amphibians and reptiles and mammals, and then the whole evolution of mammals, that whole lineage, the deuterostomes, they are based on change, whereas the others are based on being stable to a changing environment. Our lineage changes as our environment changes. Well, the thing that's so unique and important here is that our lineage has developed the endocannabinoid system and the receptors, whereas the insects and the previous cells going back to the first single-celled organisms, they have the biochemistry associated with the lipids, the fats that are turned into endocannabinoids, but they don't have the receptor system. And if you look, they don't have skin the way we do. They don't have muscles the way we do. They don't have eyes the way we, their whole nervous system, their immune system, all of the things that we take for granted and that we see as part of mammals, for example, they don't have. And I believe it's because they have not evolved the endocannabinoid system to the level where what it's doing is fostering the ability to adapt to change by changing. Yeah.
Well, see, on that point, I would imagine that the first monkeys to really get the clue and go hardcore would be the ones that developed opposable thumbs for rolling joints.
Or at least knew how to pick a bud and eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I believe that the entire evolution of our species is driven by our endocannabinoid system. And if you think about it, that's what open-mindedness is. You know, here we are at the pinnacle of evolution with humanity. Well, what is it? It's our creativity. It's our ability to make new things that haven't existed before. That's our characteristic, and that's why I'm saying as we change our environment, we now have to adapt our minds and our social structure so that we create a sustainable economy and a sustainable interaction between humanity and our environment. Otherwise, we will go extinct, and the roaches will still be there laughing at us.
So let me understand, but this has to be working off the premise of man's evolution.
Yeah.
What do you think of the idea, if man creates a car, if man builds something, if I've got this computer screen right in front of me, 23-inch computer screen and a AMD 6-core processor, is the reason for any object that we've created in itself? If I've got a spoon here in a bowl in front of me, is the reason for the spoon existing found in itself?
No, the reason for it is part of the flow of the chemistry that makes up the universe, that makes up the planet, that makes up the biosphere. There's a continuous flow. And this goes back to this physics, far from equilibrium physics. The key here is far from equilibrium.
But if I construct a spoon to eat something with, is the reason for the spoon's existence found in itself? What's the logical reason for its existence?
The logical reasons for existence is it facilitated man's ability to move himself further from equilibrium.
My point is the reason for anything's existence is found outside itself, and so why would people think that the reason for their existence is within themselves? It's something to think about.
Well, along those lines, the physics that I'm describing, it takes away our perception of ourselves as being important and as being.
What allows the physics to exist? What allows those operating principles, those physical laws to exist?
What
are the constraints? What are the constraints formed around?
Well, the basic principle is that we tend to, on the one hand, move further from equilibrium, in other words, get more complex, because by getting more complex, we create more disorder, entropy to our surroundings. And that makes us consistent with the second law of thermodynamics that says entropy must increase. It's always been viewed as a paradox. How is it that if the basic laws of science say that entropy must increase, how is it that we have life? They seem to be contradictory. And what Prigogine pioneered was a new way of looking at things having to do with flow. You can only have flow if you have potential, right? It's like a battery. If the battery's discharged and you hook up the wires to the motor, nothing happens because there's no flow. If you've created a chemical potential in a battery and you hook up the wires, then the motor can turn because you're taking the energy and allowing it to flow and dissipate. And by dissipating, it's creating more entropy. Well, in the case of what's called flow-dependent systems, which all life are flow-dependent systems, it's the flow of the energy from outside of us that creates us and spontaneously creates the organization that was characteristic of the prebiotic soup that led to the simplest forms of life, and to their subsequent evolution, and to the evolution of things made by life, our social structures, our economic structures, and they're all flow dependent. And one of the basic
I know your point, and I've thought a lot about this. I'm just trying to create a bit of debate here, but I don't see how our political systems and our social systems. I don't see how. Tens of thousands of mindless drones, not all, okay, I'm sorry to be judgmental here, packed into a football stadium, drinking fluoride all day and becoming intoxicated on fumes, is in any way a reflection of our existence or physics the empirical science behind the very nature of this world. I don't see how that's a reflection. I see it as a total flawed substitute version of reality created by people who want to distract us from the real world.
Well, it's based on the limitations of the collective consciousness, which is a reflection of how far from equilibrium we've gotten. In the future, we will either become, as our history has documented to us, we will either become more cannabinoid endowed, because if you look from an evolutionary point of view, you know, the most prevalent neurotransmitters in our brain are the cannabinoids. People didn't know
this. Let's talk about the drug war legislation is like fully draconian, right? It's like nobody's allowed to take drugs. If you do, we'll arrest you. We'll do all these bad things to you. What if I wonder what would happen if opposite draconian legislation was passed. Like it is a requirement to smoke cannabis. What would happen, I wonder?
Well, you're talking about something that I've brought up frequently. I don't believe we should end prohibition. I think we should reverse it. We've spent 60 years doing an experiment. Now let's do the other side of the experiment and spend 60 years where everybody in government and all police have to test positive in their urine.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it should be mandatory.
Exactly.
Government-ordained fascist drugged-up economy, you know. I'm sure Domino's would be really happy.
Well, you see, now let's explore these thoughts a little bit further here. So the physics creates organization, or one of the characteristics of organization is that you always have a balance of opposing forces. We see that politically in terms of conservatives versus liberals. We see it economically, you know, in terms of boom and bust cycles. It's all part of the same natural oscillatory behavior that manifests itself from energy flowing. So we have thermostats that in, you know, that the flowing energy actually creates the thermostats and their settings. And one of the things that has that is a fundamental truth is that we generate a lot of inflammation and free radicals as part of how we fight infections. So 100 years ago in countries like America, the predominant cause of death was infectious diseases. Now that we have antibiotics and we've got public health and better nutrition, we're living longer. And as a result of living longer, we're accumulating and manifesting the damages caused by the biological friction of the free radicals and associated inflammation. So today we are dying from age-related illnesses, things like cognitive dysfunction, Alzheimer's, things like autoimmune diseases, MS, diabetes, etc., cardiovascular disease, and cancers. And free radicals play a fundamental role in all of these illnesses.
We'll stop you there, because I think that free radicals manage to change society, people like ourselves. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest is Bob Melamed. Final segment this hour, coming up next.
Some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief.
Welcome back.
There's too much confusion.
Speaking of jokers and confusion, these jokers in government are really confusing me, because, well, while they call other people criminals, they commit more crimes than any other criminal ever conceived of, and they run on platforms of being tough on crime. And people are stupid enough to elect them. Our very special guest is Bob Melamed, coming at us live. Bob, welcome back.
My pleasure to be here. I love it.
Now, so let me continue. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to continue with that thought because I think it's very important. So in order for us as individuals to live longer now, because we're now dying from these age-related illnesses, we have to change the thermostat for inflammation, and that is done by increasing your cannabinoid levels. And our, and you know, we frequently hear about how beneficial essential fatty acids are, things like omega-3s that you get from fish oils. Well, guess what? Those are the things that are made into your endocannabinoids. That's why they're good for you. And if you eliminate the receptor, this is what's called a CB1 receptor, that's the receptor that gets you high, okay? And you can genetically eliminate that and create a strain of mice that are like total blips because they don't have the receptor, okay? And they could smoke dope forever and they'll never get high because they don't have the receptor. Well, guess what? Those mice are fearful, they're very sensitive to pain, and they die young. We need our cannabinoids. We need to be higher than lower. And it's unfortunately the lower people that are ruling the world because of their natural, aggressive, narrow-minded, stupid tendencies. They're the ones who make all these rules.
You know, and that's the reason why I don't take government seriously, and I don't think I have done for quite some time because, you know, I joke around stuff all the time and I'm fairly familiar with comedy. And to think that the government is there to actually do things that are good for the public, to me, is just freaking hilarious because it's just plain not true, not in any sense of the word. Well, I can't believe how terrible it is. And because of the fact that they're such a joke, really, I think that we should actually try and push the envelope on that and turn them into a laughing stock, because that's the real thing that they hate, isn't it, Bob? They really hate people laughing at them and calling them stupid scum.
You're exactly right, and that's why I feel it's very important to spread this concept of blips and flips, because the government's been telling everybody that the marijuana users are the problem, there's something wrong with them. And in fact, now what modern science tells us is no, we are the ones who are taking an anti-aging drug that kills cancer, that eliminates and minimizes autoimmune diseases, that promotes harmony and creativity. They are the ones who are genetically defective. They are the primitive people, the insect-like people. And that's why they now have to be replaced so that we have a new paradigm for social structure based on intelligence and cooperativity and love and peace and harmony.
And all that stuff that government stands against.
Some of them are pretty smart for insects, I tell you. Hey, there might be scum and evil, but
there's different kinds of intelligence. You know, let me give you some examples. If you take these knockout mice or you use chemicals that will eliminate the cannabinoid activity, you find that early on in young mice, they will have actually better learning because you've eliminated, you know, that forgetfulness associated with pot. However, when you get to older mice and you knock out the cannabinoid system, they actually learn poorer. Now, there's a reason for this. When you first are born, your mind, your memory is largely a clean slate. So you deposit things that serve as the foundation, but later on, the memories are no longer formed by just the rigid deposition of memories. They're formed by the relationships that occur between memories. So if you tend to be cannabinoid deficient, you tend to be very linear and stuck still in that first mode of learning. Whereas the more psychedelic you become in general and foster the creative flow, the more your memories are now dependent on relationships.
Well, does that mean that relating to people means that you are actually better at appreciating what's going on? Because as far as I know, this is my opinion, of course, memory is something that everybody needs in order to basically figure out what they actually appreciate in life, because they remember what's good, they remember what's bad, and they remember what they stand for and what they stand against. So I'm not 100% sure. I mean, what is it that we really need to be talking about here in this world? Is it that we really just need to remember what is true? And I think that cannabinoids, with the amazing properties that they have, they'd be called basically the building blocks of life, wouldn't they? They're almost as important to our structure as DNA.
Well, as I said, you know, the whole evolution of our lineage of vertebrates, I believe, is driven by the fact that we have an endocannabinoid system that gives us plasticity, not only plasticity of mind, but, you know, it's fundamentally, cannabinoids are fundamentally involved in actually the development of our immune system. If you think about it, you know, think about the system in general being, you know, a collection of molecules. That's what we reach a system. And what comes into that system are two things, energy and mass. The energy comes in the form of light, sounds, all of our senses. And that's all regulated and monitored by our nervous system. And our immune system monitors the mass that comes in, the food we eat, the insects that bite us, the viruses that we inhale. And both of those systems are fundamentally regulated by the endocannabinoid system.
Well, that's a great frickin' first hour for you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, Bob, for coming on. Do you have a website there?
Yeah, I've got a website at the university, www.uccs.edu/ with the little tilde sign, and then rmelamed, R-M-E-L-A-M-E-D. And you can also find me on YouTube. I've got Dr. Bob Cannabuzz. And I've got about 30 YouTubes out there that are very educational on physics and cannabis and life.
All right. Thanks so much for coming on. Coming up next hour, ladies and gentlemen, we have an ex-CIA agent for you. Back in a moment. To hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. We will have our guest up as soon as humanly possible. We're having a little bit of a trouble connecting him. But anyway, in the meantime, I wanted to just wrap up this sort of rant about how criminal the frickin' government is and how it needs to change, because the grand difficulty that we all face currently is that we are living under the government. None of us are above the law, are we? You know, I can't walk down Queen Street in Auckland, New Zealand, and pop a cap in a store owner and get away with it, like some description of SIS agent or some description of scumbag might be able to if it was part of his job and if it was sanctioned. I can't do that. So therefore,
oh, yeah, they push people off trains and they just, you know, run people off bridges and stuff. That's fine.
Yeah. You know, so there's such a disparity, you know. Those who create the laws, ironically enough, are not bound by them. So hold on a second. Isn't that the ultimate hypocrisy of government, don't you think, Will, is that they can create the laws all they want, but they don't have to follow them?
Well, they're hypocrites because we don't hold them to the fire. That's the ultimate reason why, you know, like our guest yesterday was saying, you know, if we're not vigilant, then we're going to get tyranny, basically. And so it's part of us. It's part of it is our fault. We're allowing it, and part of it is their fault because they're trash. But we have to expect them to be scum. That's in their makeup. That's who they are. it's the way they evolved to be, as our last guest was saying. I mean, those can't help it. But we should be able to help just being railed upon, being duped, being frigging idiots every day.
Well, and I suppose this is why we're involved with the show, isn't it, Will, is that, you know, we want to help, we want to do something, we want to reach out. What I find really disheartening, and nothing, there's very little out there that I actually do find disheartening, is all of those who know the truth but choose to do nothing, to keep their heads down, even when they know there's some description of agenda, even when they know that everything is going wrong. I mean, even if they know for a fact that nothing can stop them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd like to do more, and I'd like to, I mean, I'm inadequate, you know, I'd like to get out in the street more, and I'd like to do, achieve more, not just wave placards around, but actually get somewhere. And we are working with people, and we are going to get somewhere, but I just wish more people I know who know this stuff would just go, okay, I'm going to put the office job down to the side for a minute because our future depends on this. And you don't have the choice to be an office slave idiot if all your freedoms are taken away from you, as this government, as our collective governments are doing right now. So, you know, it's basics first. Put your best foot forward and let's do something.
Yeah. Well, because what, ladies and gentlemen, is the alternative to doing something and actually accomplishing something? You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz. Back in a moment.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, where we try to give plug play to the people who really, really put their lives and their livelihoods often on the line to get the truth out to the masses. On that note, we have a very special guest joining us right now from New Zealand. His name is Leonce Keeley from thepinegapsaga.com. Leonce, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Vincent. How are you?
Borderlining on fabulous is my party line, mate. Remember the next election? Vote fabulous.
Okay. Well, that's good. So what can I do for you?
Well, the one thing that I'd really love you to divulge is what the Pine Gap Saga, your book that you wrote in 1977 and has only been released in 2008, is actually about, because, basically, I'm just extremely curious, because we're all very well familiar with the dangers of the CIA and various other government agencies trying to take over the world and abuse people's rights and basically operate in extremely underhanded ways. And it's a rare opportunity that we have for somebody who has firsthand experience.
Oh, okay. It was a very long time ago, as you might imagine, back in 75. I was there from 70 to 75. And I left mainly because I advised the Australian government that the United States was cheating on them, because I'd found out through the... because I was in their computer centre, the top secret. Well, actually, it was top secret. You just don't get into the computer room without that sort of coverage. And the appointments there is by the President of the United States. So, in a way, it was a bit of an honour. But, however, I wrote the book mainly because of the way that Australians were being treated at the Pine Gap situation there. And it was more or less a big bitch, a real big bitch we got into a book. And I gave it to the Canberra Times to read, and the head editor rang me up. He said, do you really want to do anything about this? And I said, oh, yeah, I'm at the stage where I don't give a damn, because I was going through a divorce and all the rest of it because of the damn secrecy in that place. You couldn't even come home and talk about your work. And I said, just go ahead. And this was back in 77, I think it was, after I'd left and I'd stewed about it for a couple of years. So they gave it a full page in the Canberra Times, and I had people ringing me up and saying, God almighty, did you see this? And I hadn't had the paper at that time. But anyway, I got to work at 7:30 in the morning, and the Secretary for Defence phoned me up and said, would you like to come down sometime today and talk about this? I said, yeah. I was starting to shake in the knees a bit. I said, I might get down there later on in the afternoon. He said, how about right bloody now? And there's a Commonwealth car outside your door to pick you up to take you there. So
now that's an invitation.
Yeah. Yeah. So I gets down there, and the room was totally full of dark glasses, and there were all the CIA guys from just about every bloody where. There must have been about 20 of the buggers there.
And, the men in black, as it were.
Oh, you got no idea. And I really thought, my palms were sweating like you'd never could believe. And anyway, the Secretary for Defence said, well, are you going to take this any further? And I said, well, I think I might have achieved what I set out to do, actually. And anyway, there was a guy there called Wally Capel on. He's the top head of the state of security in this country. And after the meeting there, he took me outside and he said, man, he says, I had to get down on my bloody hands and knees to stop these bastards from putting you away. That's how close it was. So he said, are you going to take this any further? I said, no, I'm going to cool it for the time being. So that's why I waited all these years. I'm old enough now to probably not worry. So they can do what they damn well like. So, yeah, working there was interesting in a way, and I guess most of us were all ex-defence people.
When you say working there, specifically, where is Pine Gap? Because I'd love to define, like, the area that we're actually talking about. And it was a facility of some kind? I mean, how big was it? Was there, you know?
It's a facility and a half. It's near Alice Springs in Central Australia. The reason it's there is because there's very little radio interference activity going on in that part of the world. And that's why they chose the centre of Australia. They could have taken it to Guam when Whitlam was in power, you know, Prime Minister Gough Whitlam. He was going to go up there and close the base. And he jumped on a plane with all the placard waving people back in 1972 in Canberra saying, close the base. And he gets up there, so the CIA meets him, takes him away somewhere, and he came back about white as a sheet of paper. He never got his foot on Pine Gap soil, that's for sure. And I believe they told him that, okay, you might be worried about yourself, but you've got family too, you know. So the only two words that he'll issue to this day is, when they ask him about it, is no comment. And that's all he said when he came back to Canberra, no comment.
Those two, I hate hearing those words. I hate it so much. And I hear them out of politicians more often than any other phrase, more often than we're going to enslave your country incrementally.
Either that or I can't remember.
Yeah. Oh, no. They don't say I can't remember. They say I don't recall.
So I'm interested, Leon, in a blueprint of this place, or not an exact blueprint, but can you give us a picture of, you know, how many stories above ground, below ground, so the sort of span of
plenty of stories below ground, and there's a whole bunch of stuff underground that I wasn't even game enough to go down there because it's got a great big radioactive door, big sign on it, the nuclear type sign, I say, extreme danger. So they've got nuclear power and all that kind of crap. But I was in the computer center. Now, it's huge. When I first got there, because four of us were chosen from defense. Now, I didn't apply for the job. They approached us, four defense people, and because of our background and work in the computer area. And they did 6 months. The CIA came out and did their own 6 months study on us, would you believe? They wouldn't let ASIO anywhere near the place. It's Australian Security Intelligence Organisation. They didn't want them in on the picture at all. So after 6 months, a job was offered to four of us, and each one was on a shift rotational basis on the large IBM computers. Now, I thought, okay, we've been trained in Adelaide on IBM and all that kind of stuff. And when we got there, I walked in to the computer centre, and I almost freaked out. I know defence is big. I mean, got four big computer centres there, but this was just bloody unreal. You had to have microphones on like we're talking through now in order to talk to people down the other end of the place. So it's massive. And only there's three areas of security, like the outside perimeter is guarded by the federal police. Then you've got another area that you go into, which is guarded by them also. But then once you get through that gate to get into the centre itself, you have the American security people there. Have gun, will travel. So you don't get that far. But what goes on there is, this is back a long time ago, remember, but we were Star Wars then. You wouldn't be able to pick up a newspaper anywhere in the world without them being able to read it over your shoulder or talk on a phone like we are now. The fact that we've mentioned Pine Gap has probably set off a tape up there now.
I would venture a paraphrase here. Pine Gap is the Area 51 of Australia.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah, for sure, yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of secret stuff going on there. What exactly was your role and purpose in this facility?
A programmer analyst for IBM, and, of course, being that, we had the the top security clearance by the US government because we knew everything that was going on. And there was one day, and rose my shackles is I was sitting there with a guy from Langley and at the console of the computer one day, and he said, yeah, we don't tell Australians everything, you know, because my accent may have been changing. The only Aussie on each shift of all these Americans, my kids sounded like Californians. Anyway, I said, what do you mean? And then he went about telling me how they kept the secrets away from Australian intelligence, although it's supposed to be in a joint defence organisation, you know. So I thought, bugger this. So I writes to Lance Barnard, who was then the Minister for Defence in Canberra, and told him what was going on. Oh, Christ. The airport at bloody Alice Springs was full of Boeing 707s and God knows what from everywhere, and I was the meat and the sandwich and not the most popular guy on the planet at the time. So that's why I actually left to go back to Canberra in 1975 after 5 years there, and thinking I was a great patriot. But I had a couple of generals in Australian Defence come up to me and shook my hands and said, God, it took balls to do what you did. And you're one of Australia's unsung heroes and all that. And the whole pity of all this is we can't damn well say a word about it because of the goddamn security. So that's where I was left in limbo. And God, trying to get a job after all that and going to interviews with the government and saying, yeah, I worked at Pine Gap. And they said, what did you do? And I said, well, can't tell you. It didn't go over too well.
And, yeah, see, that'd be real funny if you go to an employer to get a job and they say, oh, what was your previous employment? And you say, well, I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Well, exactly. Actually, I could tell you, then they would kill me. That's a problem. geez. Anyway,
well, how did your CV look? Was it blank?
I'll say. What happened then was after this meeting down in 1977 with the Secretary for Defence, they had to have the phone cut off from home and from Defence Switchboard to me because everybody, they said, including the KGB, was looking for me. So what they did was shot me over to South Australia, Port Augusta, a place called Port Augusta up in the north of South Australia, with the Commonwealth Railways, as it was called then. And I sat there for a couple of years, cool in the hills, and then went back to Canberra and worked for Centrelink or Social Security. And then I later on went to Darwin. But also in Alice Springs, and this is interesting stuff, there was, since World War II, there was another secret base there called, and run by the United States Air Force, called Weather Control Station. Now, use the word control. Now, I never took any notice of that too much until later years when HAARP became a common word. But they've changed the name of that facility up there now, and it's something to do with a joint weather research establishment or something like that. But you can bet your life on it, it has a lot to do with HAARP. And that recent cyclone of a very, very big cyclone that hit northern Queensland, I reckon that had to be a HAARP system. That went right in, like no other cyclone's gone in inland as far as this one has. It reached Western Australia, would you believe? It was still a Category 1 when I got there. So it had to be guided all that way, I'd say.
That's very interesting.
It is.
I hear allegations of HAARP, that kind of thing, but to have some description of causal link or empirical evidence tying HAARP to storm systems, I don't know the specifics of it. I mean, how exactly could one discern if a storm is influenced by HAARP or not? Do you know?
Oh, yeah. There's some people have taken shots of the weather map and they can see the pulse. There's a pulse. One hit Western Australia, oh, I don't know, about 12 months ago, I don't know where that link went, but I could see that pulse hitting. Not too long after that, they had a minor earthquake in Western Australia. And then they had some here in Queensland, like in the lower end of this state, which is over 2,000 miles long, mind you. And there was pulsating going on there, and this was a fairly big black pulse. And then we had the floods. And then up in North Queensland, there was this pulsating going on there, and then you had this goddamn big cyclone. So this is how it's done. It's
When you say pulsating, I mean, what exactly are you referring to? Are they isobars, or are they tectonic rumblings, or what?
No, they're circular in nature. Like they're like a radio wave coming out from a radio tower in a circle. They beam down like that, and they're like a pool, like throwing a rock into a pool of water, and the beam goes, like the ripples go out, or something like that. But it's very quick.
There's also the northern lights type phenomenon that's thought to, you know, the aurora borealis type effect that was witnessed in 2008 in China at such a latitude never sort of seen before.
Mm. But all these things have been played around for years, you know. And there are other interesting things going on, like probably the Solomon Islands and the UFOs that exist there and have been there for quite a long, long time. And Kelvin Alpin could probably tell you a little bit about them because he lives and works there a lot. And you've interviewed him just not too long ago. Now, Kelvin's one heck of a patriot for New Zealand, and things are happening there that would scare the hell out of anyone, particularly. I sent you a link on trillions of dollars about to be given away by New Zealand's National and Maori parties. They're going to sell you out pretty soon. You know, this is going to
What do you mean, gonna? They're already have made. How do you think they got into Parliament?
Well, that's it. But Kelvin was behind Direct Democracy. That's a party that was going to go some places, and I hope to heck in the future something like that does come up. And, we had One Nation over here, and I went over to Kelvin and gave him some help on Direct Democracy, putting that together.
All right.
Hello, we've got our very
special guest, ladies and gentlemen, joining us live from Brisbane, Australia, is Leonce Kelly, the PineGapSaga.com. We'll be right back momentarily after the break on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz. Back in a tick.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Desert's bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Now, one question I wanted to ask you, you've talked about HAARP. Was Pine Gap a HAARP facility? Because I've heard rumors that there were HAARP facilities in Australia and many places throughout the world. Have you heard that rumor?
No, not at all. But the other one certainly would have been the weather control station run by the US Air Force in Alice Springs. And they don't share the information at all, not with anyone. They keep the pieces apart, you know. And there was another facility at Woomera, which they had there. And that one was used for satellite imagery. They could read newspapers from there if you was out in the open and just tell you what you was reading, you know, that sort of stuff. And that one's closed now and they've gone somewhere else. But Pine Gap's still there and probably will always be there.
Mm-hmm. Big investment in order to get it running up in the first place. Be a bad idea to abandon it. Another question that we've got in here that Kelvin wants me to ask you is that I wanted to know in relation to the CIA operations and getting rid of problems and people about to testify to Congress and what their attitude was.
Oh, hell. that's scary stuff. One day up at Pine Gap, I was sitting down there with another guy from Langley, and we was talking about that plane that blew up on the way from Chicago to Washington to testify against Tricky Dick Nixon. And I said, gee, that was a terrible bloody thing. And they said, yeah, well, they admitted they did it. The CIA blew a bloody plane up. And I said, well, there's 200 people on board that, or a bit over. And he looked at me like I had two heads, and he put down a piece of paper and he put a decimal point there, and then he about 1,000 bloody zeros after that. And then he said, you come up with a number, like number one and so forth. He said, that's all it means out of the population, American. I thought, my the living God, these guys are, you know, they're crazy. And the other one, the Air Force, you know, when McVeigh blew up that place in, where was that, Oklahoma?
April 19, Oklahoma City bombing.
Oklahoma was, yes. And six Air Force guys were travelling from an Air Force base where they actually set up another truckload of this stuff to prove that it couldn't possibly have been done by a bunch of fertiliser, and they blew it up near a building that they had erected. And nothing happened, really, except a big hole in the ground. And they was flying to Washington to give evidence, these six, I don't know whether they're generals or not, but they're Air Force people. And that plane blew up as well on the way. So no witnesses, it never got any further than that. So McVeigh was a patsy, just like the patsy out here, Martin Bryant at in Tasmania. They're supposed to done all that shooting and whatnot, which, you know, was an inside job for sure.
Oh, really? The Tasmanian shooter? Yeah, I didn't know that one.
Yeah.
I know he killed, 19 people, eh?
Well, he was supposed to, but there was a Brigadier Ted Sarong came over from Western Australia when I was in the Confederate Action Party that started up before One Nation, and he had a talk with us, and he said he was one of the best shots in the SAS because he was head of the SAS, and he said he couldn't come near the feat that this guy was did, and he said Martin Bryant couldn't hit a building if he stood inside it. You know, that's how inept he was. And and then his lawyer, Martin Bryant's lawyer, when they first interviewed him, he came back to the government. He said, "Look, I can't get anywhere with this guy. All he says is, why did they bring me here?" You know, and that's when the government put in their own lawyer, and he's been locked away without trial and anything forevermore.
It's just like all the pilots coming out, pilots from 9/11 Truth, saying there's just no way. You know, I know a top Air New Zealand pilot's been there for years, and he told me there's absolutely no way, due to ground effects, you could fly into the side of the Pentagon at the altitude, at that speed. And yet, Hanny Hanjul, this guy who couldn't even land a Cessna,
There's more and more coming out about that, and there's a lot of engineers saying that, you know, it's just not possible to bring down a building like that and all the rest of it.
Why is it you think the average member of the public, though, why is it the average Australian, the average New Zealander, the average American can't get this around their heads, and they can't break, you know, enough to break their trust in the establishment? They keep voting for these, well, murderers, essentially.
Well, you only got two parties, you see. John Howard brought in the two-party preferred system. That means you can only vote for either Liberal or Labor. Now, when Pauline Hanson got into Parliament, she started the One Nation Party. She got 1.2 million votes. This was the first round which she went for, and the National, and no members in Parliament. 1.2 million votes, no members in Parliament. The National Party had 5,000 votes and got 36 members in Parliament. Now, there's democracy, hey. So that's what went on there. Now, I mentioned the Confederate Action Party. Are you still there?
Yeah.
I mentioned the Confederate Action Party started up, and this shows you just how bloody serious they want to hold the reins down there in Canberra. Oh, one of the members, the head of the Confederate Action Party, went over to Perth to hold a meeting. So he held the meeting there. It was going really, really well. And, of course, in Canberra, they was calling us right-wing extremist Nazis and all the rest of it, you know. But anyway, he came out of the meeting and a bullet came out of nowhere through the windscreen and hit him in the skull. Now, that was written off as probably a drug bust, they called it, and must have been something to do with drug dealing and all the rest of it. But we got the message over here and thought, well, they said, well, fold the Confederate Action Party, and then it became One Nation. Well, they couldn't do the same thing to Pauline Hanson without, you know, coming under deep scrutiny. But they did put her in jail, I suppose you remember that. They put her in jail. They didn't know what the hell to charge her with, but they put her into jail the second time the elections were on, so to keep her out of the way. And after the elections were held, and of course, Liberals got back in and everything was cool, and so they let her out of jail. And she never got compensation, nothing. And it cost us, we had to raise $1 million because I was in the One Nation Party then. And we had to raise $1 million to get the lawyers to go to town and free her. For what? There was nothing to free her from, really. But, you know, this is the game they played. It's a big game.
Yep. Ridiculous, huh?
And, of course, Howard is a bloody Rothschild, New World Order guy, and he was the guy that was behind Never Ever GST, that's Goods and Services Tax, and then one of the Bilderbergs came out from New York. We know that because they told us. He went to Canberra, saw John Howard the following day, the day that he left, this guy, Howard announced GST. So, you know, the orders are coming from the Bilderbergs or the Rothschilds.
Well, that's like John Key over here in New Zealand, you know, the fake conservative National Party Prime Minister here. I mean, he said he'd never put up GST. He said this on record. All the videos were over YouTube. And then he throws it up to 15%, you know, in November last year.
Yeah, you can't trust
anyone. On top of the climate change tax, you know?
Yeah, climate, that's the greatest load of garbage that ever existed. The change is coming in through HARP. That's where the bloody change is coming from.
Yeah.
And what I find hilarious, everything else going on. Yeah.
What I find most hilarious about John Key's campaign platform is that he campaigned on a platform of keeping New Zealand sovereign.
What a bloody joke, isn't it? Oh, dear. Well,
we do need to become a Republican. We do need to kick these guys out. I mean, this is the simple solution.
Well, the next thing you're going to find is they're going to make an excuse like they did here to take your guns away from you. So you can't bloody do anything about it when they really...
They've already done that. Most of the population here are a bunch of gun grabbers. I mean, they've got the public consent, you know, on their side. And so, the vast majority of educated, normal New Zealanders are just these, you know, leftist shills who think any weapon is just, you know, devil spawn creation. And that people don't have the right to defend themselves. Well, that's the government's job. You know, you call 111 and you wait 4 days for the person to turn up to your ports.
You call 111 and you wait 4 days and then they send a taxi, Will.
And then they bill your family.
For wasting taxi time, you know.
Otherwise, ambulance to pick up the bodies or something.
You're one step ahead of the Chinese who shoot your family. They'll shoot you in a lineup, then they'll bill your family for the ammunition. You know, AK rounds, you know, it's 80 cents for a 7.62 by 39 round, you know.
And if you don't like it, we'll feed you artificial rice made from plastic. As an article came out the other day that they're actually doing that. They're mixing sweet potatoes and potatoes in with industrial plastic so that when it's boiled, it doesn't break down. It still maintains its shape as a rice. And to eat three bowls of it is the equivalent of eating one plastic bag.
Then you got cancer.
You know,
the system's so parasitic, isn't it?
Recycling at its most humanitarian.
I'm sure the climate change movement would like that.
Sure.
One.
Yeah. Well, there's another guy you should talk to one day, and I'll put him on to you. And it's Brian McDermott. He runs a online newspaper over here trying to get the truth out. It's Ye Shall Know the Truth, it's called, and it's called the Free State Voice, because he set up a free state within Queensland and getting away from Australia more or less in that way, and he's done it legally, and he's a hell of a guy, and it's called the Free State Voice, if you want to Google it any time, but I'll send you that info, and I'll get on to Brian and maybe you could talk to him, because he's a full bottle on everything like this going on. He puts it out in his newspapers every day.
Great stuff. Yeah. We love freedom advocates from all around the world and, send them our way.
Right.
We've had people on this show from the UK, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and then in the USA, of course. And of course there is our friend Agape in Europe, Czechoslovakia, I think he is in. The interesting thing about freedom is that it is a universal concept, and so therefore freedom fighters come in many shapes, sizes, forms, languages, and affiliations and all of that, but they all agree on the same central principle. We shouldn't be exterminated by government.
Exactly.
I'm just looking up cqfreestate.com. That's a website, I believe it is, Central Queensland Free State. And I'm liking some of his categories right now. Political violations, globalism, free trade, etc. Banking and finance, Freemasonry, communism and Marxism.
He's got the lot.
Yep. I mean, that's covering.
And every day, get onto him, and you've got his details now, and talk to him, because by hell, he's interesting. I only had with him yesterday. He comes to my place fairly regularly, and we're trying to save the world and all that. Oh, dear. What else can I do?
It's almost become a cliche. It's almost become a cliche, isn't it? Oh, we're trying to save the world. And there's two types of trying to save the world. One is being a useless, mindless slave and going, oh, climate change, oh, it's going to get us. And the other one is our government are a bunch of criminals and we need to kick them out and restore some description of freedom.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what's got to happen.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the interesting thing about trying to save the world, that there's the two aspects of it. One is trying to save the world as in save the planet, and the other's trying to save the world as in save humanity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's two very, very big distinctions there, because the latter actually care about humans.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
I think if we empower humans, we can look after our environment too, you know? I mean, yeah, one exactly. benefits the other.
You know, yeah, I mean, and we're the ones that are subjugated and need to be saved. I mean, the only reason why the planet is in such a bad way is because humanity is in such a bad way. You know, one's correlated to the other. You know, it's pretty logical from where I'm sitting because, well, I don't think that there's ever really been a point in history where humanity has been totally on the level and everybody's been sweet as and everything is in control. Whatever. I don't think that's ever happened before. And I'm all for creating things that have never existed before. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. We're broadcasting live from the future with our special guest, Leonce Keeley. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We do get interrupted from time to time by phone calls, but it's okay. It's probably just the CIA saying, oi. Isn't that right, Leonce?
That's right. Now that other phone
thing. There it goes again.
But I think it's probably them. But I'm not going to worry about it.
Spam his phones now.
It sounds like there's a myriad of ones going on there. Take it off the hook, mate.
They've just sent like some sort of EMP your way and just activated everything in the house. So machines turning on you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like that movie, The Ring. Oh, the horror. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, where government corruption and destruction of our human spirit is our bread and butter. Our very special guest.
Are you guys in a bunker over there at all? I'm surprised they've let you be on the air this long, you know.
No. I live in central Auckland in a very wealthy suburb, right next to one of the biggest mansions around, and I live in the crappy Walker Flats.
They're just letting us mature a little. And then they'll, you know, cut our heads off or something.
Yeah, kill them or they grow in the CIA operating procedure sense of the word. Hey, well, one thing I wanted to really kind of divulge from you, I mean, with your military experience, and there is a lot of talk now that this fight against the New World Order, against the globalists, is going to get violent. Now, I've been thinking about military strategy and things of that nature. I mean, what's your real take on that in terms of fighting against a government or things of that nature? What tactics would people likely to be employed that would work?
It's hard to say without the military behind them. There was a time, not too many years ago when they was actually talking about a military coup here in Australia. Some of the generals were getting together because things were getting out of hand in Canberra by the politicians. That's under the Labor Party. It's calmed down a little bit. Julia Gillard is now the Prime Minister. She's a lesbian. Her boyfriend, she lives within the lodge, for God's sake, is a homosexual. And Bob, head of the Greens, is also a homosexual, so the country's in good hands, eh? anyway, I think she's not coming up with this global climate change too well, and that's why we're getting punished by cyclones and that through the HAARP system until we come good with the more tax on climate change.
Well, so. You know, see, now that was an interesting theory that I had, and it was a conspiracy theory. I don't have empirical evidence to tie that to it, but it seems that if you're a country that really, really kind of is against climate change legislation, suddenly, for some reason, extremely bad weather hits you until you do pass the legislation, and then it goes away.
Exactly. I'm being cynical, but I think that's the way it is. Oh dear. So where do we go from here?
We've just got moral degradation in all facets, haven't we? We've just got like complete redundant individuals running our countries, it seems. You know, you mentioned kind of the lurid ways of some of these individuals running Australia, and you know, we've got the same here in New Zealand, and there's no recourse for the public, is there? I mean, are there enough individuals in Australia who are concerned right now to try and take up some of these issues?
You certainly don't get a voice because the media is controlled by these guys in Canberra. You know, it's not a free press except for this Queensland Free State Voice. That's the only one putting out anything that would be against them. God knows how long this will run. But our media is so controlled that they wouldn't dare say anything adverse against the powers that be. You know, that's the way it is.
And do you see much scepticism at all, or do you see much scepticism in the public, or are they all just watching Australian Idol?
Oh hell, everybody in the public sceptic about what's going on. They all know that global warming and all the rest of it's just a load of bull. But what can they do? You know, they can write to their politicians, and what's the good of that? Because they won't read it half the time. And they're behind the bloody the whole damn ruin of the nation anyway, you know. They're just feathering their own nest, short-term gain, long-term pain. I mean, they've forgotten that you've got to eat too, and they're decimating the farmers and not helping them out. And, you know, we don't grow much of our food here now at all. 98% of our food comes in from overseas. Great for defence, isn't it? You know, just get cut off and you're nowhere.
It's just sad that we can't get any sort of populist grassroots concern, can we? I mean, like, you know, maybe we need celebrities to say what's going on. I don't know what the solution is. I see, you know, the most high-profile person I can see in Australia kind of going up against the government right now is probably race car driver Mark Scaife, you know, saying increase the open road speed limit to 130 km, you know, but... Maybe Australia needs someone like Mark Scaife on a serious issue like climate change. I don't know. What do you think the solution is?
Well, I hope he does, because our roads are third world here. We're giving so much money away to other countries to build their roads. And, you know, you go to Bangkok and they've got beautiful roads over there thanks to the $1.5 billion we gave them to do that with, and other places. And South Korea, we gave them $1.5 billion, and they built the shipping industry, which destroyed ours in Whyalla, South Australia, and all these Butte decisions they make down there in Canberra. So, once again, it's not much good having 130-kilometre-hour roads if you can't bloody well drive that fast on them without your car falling apart. We've got terrible bloody roads here. And now they've got
no problem giving money to other people, though, do they? They love indebting themselves to other people in the name of helping them.
Oh, yeah. Well, Julia Gillard's just given $500 million to Indonesia to help to build more Islamic schools. And, you know, it's well over $1 billion around the Pacific since she's been in government, and that's not that many months. Yet they can't find money to help the people in the cyclone up North Queensland or the floods here in Brisbane, which you've probably read about. It's, you know, just bloody terrible.
See, now this is the problem, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? The people who we elect to look after our interests look after anybody's interests except ours, you know? And this is true in many of our countries. I'd like to thank you so much, Leon Skeely, for coming on the show with us today. It has been an absolute pleasure, mate.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. And next, talk to Brian McDermott. He's really something.
Thanks, Leon. Right. Awesome stuff.
Okay, will do. Bye, guys. There he goes, Leon Skeely, ladies and gentlemen. You will be able to catch up on the archives at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com if you're keen. And we'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening. Bye.